What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 77. This is going to be a continuation of the podcast a few weeks ago talking about reversing diabetes with a ketogenic diet. So we left a few things out of that podcast, so I just wanted to continue the conversation and give you a little more details on how a low-carb diet can really help diabetes and help you better manage that condition. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been good. But last week on the Kobe episode, I made like one of the biggest mistakes. Definitely the biggest mistake I've ever made in this podcast. Maybe the biggest mistake in my entire life. All right. So I was telling a story about Kobe and
this better be good, by the way.
I was telling a story about Kobe and Allen Iverson, their rookie year, how Allen Iverson came to LA. Him and Kobe went out to dinner. The version that I told was, after dinner, Allen Iverson went back to the hotel and went to sleep. I honestly don't know if Allen Iverson has ever gone to bed early. And he definitely doesn't go to bed early in LA. What really happened is Allen Iverson went to the club while Kobe went to the gym. Allen Iverson did not go back to the hotel and went to sleep. Got it. Would have had a much different career and would have been a much different person if that was his lifestyle.
That's funny.
Yeah, so yeah. That was a really big mistake. I'm surprised he didn't call me out on that. Like, come on, Allen Iverson going to bed early? Not him.
That's so true. I never thought about that. And you're right. If Allen Iverson had a normal 9-to-5 mentality, he'd probably still be in the league. Yeah. Like, he was such a beast.
Oh, I mean, if he was playing today, the league is designed for him.
Oh, designed for him. Yeah, but he burned the candle at both ends. He always did.
Yeah, so
that's funny.
Yeah, definitely had to clarify that mistake. But another thing is, so I do one really long outdoor run a week. I've been doing this at Mount Diablo. It's about 15 miles. So on the way up, I'm usually listening to podcasts or music or something. And then the way down, I take out my headphones. That way I can just enjoy that peace and quiet by myself. So this last time I did the run, the weather's a lot nicer. So there's a lot of other people out on the trail and everything. So while I'm having my headphones out, on my way back down, my time to really think about everything, I'm starting to pass some people. So when I get to the top, there's one person at the top who drove, and he's younger, probably around our age.
How do you know he drove?
Because there's cars up there.
And you can see the parking lot? Okay.
And when he sees me running up the stairs to get to the top, his jaws kind of drop a little bit. What, this dude just ran this? Okay. And then while I'm up there for 30 seconds just snapping a quick selfie because it's the only time that I've been up there that you can actually see.
Okay, so it's not super foggy?
Yeah, you can see everything. You can see the Golden Gate Bridge, which is probably 50, 60 miles away from there.
That's cool.
It's a beautiful view of the Bay Area as long as it's not the densest fog in the world.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a great view. And then another car full of people, these kids were probably in their 20s. They all drove all the way to the top. I saw them drive up while I was running. And they just looked at me weird. It probably took us 20 minutes to drive up here. This dude ran all the way. Mm-hmm. And actually, I don't even think it takes 20. I think it takes 30 minutes because you're driving really slow. It's a windy road. I've driven it before. And they're man, this dude ran it. They just looking at me weird. And it's yeah.
Hold on. Do you run up the road to get to the top?
Once you get close to the top, the last quarter mile or so.
It's the same path?
There's a trail and then it goes to road, trail to road. Okay. So you run across a couple of parking lots, then you run parallel with the road. So it's kind of both.
Okay. I didn't even know there was a road to the top.
Yeah, you can drive all the way to the top.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So quite a few people did that. And then while I'm running back down, I see this guy who's looks like he's in pretty good shape and everything, hiking to the top. And that dude looks like he was struggling.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, the definitely dude works out. Probably tougher workout than like 90% of people in the Bay Area. Like, you know, the dude definitely pushed his stuff that day. But I was just thinking, like, man, how lucky are we that not only this is what we're passionate about is just like improving our health and fitness, but then also like we can apply that to our lives. And like, I don't know, I feel like we're outliers when it comes to just this whole like health and fitness game. Like, we're in better shape than everybody. This dude's getting a harder workout than probably anybody that he knows. And he was struggling getting to the top.
And you smoked that shit now.
Yeah, like I said, like, oh, hey, man, good morning, or like, how's it going? And he was just, you couldn't even give me an answer, just kind of gave me a wave to let me know he was still alive and okay.
Yeah.
And like, at this point, I'm sprinting now. Like, yeah. I've done the hard part.
You're not looking back.
Yeah. So I was just like, man, I was just like feeling so like, so I guess just blessed and just like, you know, mm-hmm. grateful that this is what we're passionate about. Because mm-hmm. if we had this same amount of passion for the stock market, mm-hmm. oh, we'd be millionaires right now.
Crushing the game.
You know, but like, I don't really know if we'd still be as healthy as we are. And another thing I looked at was just on Facebook, they have this thing like memories, and it just shows you like pictures of stuff that happened like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I saw like somebody's profile picture now of somebody that I went to college with. And I looked at him, and then I looked at a couple other people that like he still hangs out with from college. And man, they look like prisoners of war. Like, I know that's probably not the right thing to say, but they just, like, their hair's falling out. Mm-hmm. They look so skinny. They look like they're in their, like, 40s or 50s, and I think these guys are a couple years younger than me.
Yeah, so, like, late 20s.
Yeah, like, I don't even know. I don't know if it's, like, bad diet, if they're, like, doing drugs, like, what's going, combination. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't really know, and I was just like, man, I'm glad I'm not them.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, I'm just, you know, having that that gratitude, like, we're I feel like we're on the right track. Like, almost every time I get new information, it just reinforces that we're on the right track. And it's like, out of all the things to be passionate about, I'm like, this is probably one of the best things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I 100% agree with that. Yeah. And you're just talking about being, you know, happy and what's the word, gratitude you want to use. Yeah. So I think that's true. Yeah. Not a little sidetrack. I just heard somebody I used to work out with every once in a while. This is back in the day at Extreme Fitness. You know what he does now?
What?
Heroin. That was on the street doing heroin.
That was definitely not the term I expected that to be. I always expected it to be, oh, he's still there, or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, because we kind of have a mutual friend. I ran into her, and I was like, oh, hey, so what's up with this guy? I mean, not to say any names or anything. And she was like, yeah, he's not doing good. And I was like, yo, that's... And he's young, he's our age. You know what I mean? I was like, that's sad.
Is that like he had some sort of injury, started taking Vicodin, oxycodone, something like that?
Oh, I didn't get the whole story.
I mean, that's probably what happens.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I think it happens to a lot of people. I just heard the heroin and I was like, oh, that sucks. You know what I mean? And I was like, on to the next. But, no, yeah, I think we're doing good, man. Like, I couldn't ask for anything else than what we're doing right now.
Yeah. I mean, if we were this passionate about the stock market, like, we'd be millionaires.
I know.
Like, there's...
That's true.
I highly doubt that we would not be successful at that.
Now I just know way too much about salt. Yeah. If only we can make a lot of money off that shit, you know?
But, yeah, that's it for me. I mean, do you have anything new other than your friend's addicted to heroin?
Yeah, friend's addicted to heroin, and which is kind of sad. But, I mean, it happens, especially in that part of town where we grew up. You know what I mean? It's common out there for sure.
Oh, especially with the whole opioid overprescription epidemic thing. I mean, that's, we don't need to get into that.
We know the whole other thing. Yeah. But it's true. You know, that definitely did happen. But, yeah, no, as far as me, same old, same old. I wanted to, so, you know, we always say like we are our own worst critic sometimes, you know? Yeah. So obviously we're doing a whole series on the ketogenic diet. We're both very pro ketogenic diet. I think it's, like a species appropriate diet. I say that a lot. I think everyone should be on a ketogenic diet. Even if you're an extreme athlete, I think it does provide enough benefits for you to perform well and optimal no matter what you're doing. And there's plenty of people out there crushing the game on a ketogenic diet.
Or at least a periodic. Like, even if you don't want to be in it 365, like, there's still times where you should be in some sort of ketogenic state.
Yeah, sure. I agree with that. And so, obviously, touching on diabetes a few weeks ago, it's such a big topic that, you know, you try and jam things into 1 hour, but people could spend a whole, you know, college course on diabetes and not cover everything, you know? So this just wanted me, or this made me want to retouch on it again. So I just wanted to make a few things, I guess, more clear that after re-listening to that week's podcast, I didn't think I made very clear. Because, you know, we always, or I have a real problem assuming people's background information. When I really shouldn't do that. You know what I'm saying? I should assume everyone comes at it from a real low baseline. but that's just my own fault. But I talked about diabetes being reversible, and I never made it super clear that we were talking about type 2 diabetes, not type 1 diabetes. So in type 2 diabetes, people still produce insulin. Their body simply doesn't respond to it properly. Someone with type 1 diabetes doesn't produce insulin at all. This usually happens at birth. Their beta cells just don't produce insulin. It can also happen later in life from an autoimmune issue. Their body will literally attack and kill their beta cells. So these people don't produce insulin anymore, and they'll always have to be on some sort of insulin. That can't be reversed, but it can be better regulated on a ketogenic diet. Someone with type 2 diabetes can have their symptoms put in remission if they follow a ketogenic diet long enough. And that was really my point last week. You know, there is a difference between type 1 and type 2.
Yeah, we just said diabetes. We never...
really clarified.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the difference. And pretty much everything we're talking about is type 2.
It's going to be type 2.
Yeah. And the autoimmune issue, I've heard cases of their body being able to heal itself and come back from it. So a lot of this just has to do with how much damage is done in the first place and how kind of like age, just like how much repair can your body do?
Yeah, how far gone are you?
Yeah, and then it's also like, what is your ability to bounce back? I mean, a lot of this stuff, the earlier it happens in age, like, you know, you got your hormones working for you, so you do have a little bit of benefit. If some of this stuff happens when you're in your 80s, I mean, kind of good luck.
Good luck.
Hopefully you can, but I mean, it's kind of hard to tell.
It's going
to
be hard, yeah. And I also made a claim that giving insulin to type 2 diabetics should be illegal because too much insulin is what caused their condition in the first place. And just to show how stupid that is, if you understand the kind of the mechanisms behind diabetes, that's like trying to put out a forest fire by starting another forest fire. Like, you know how dumb that sounds?
Yeah, I mean, that just makes like no logical sense at all.
It's like, hey, we got a fire in LA. Okay, guys, let's start a fire in San Diego. Maybe people forget about the LA fire.
Yeah, you can't fight fire with fire.
It's so stupid. So that is, once you understand diabetes, that's when someone, I see it all the time, people giving diabetics insulin, and I'm like, yo, you are making the situation way worse. Like, you're not helping at all. But that's really what it's about.
Well, and it's type 1 and type 2 are two different things. So you can't, like, treat them both the same way, even though that's our standard of care is, oh, type 1 diabetes, they need insulin. Type 2 diabetes, well, yeah, fuck it, let's just give them this one too.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I wanted to go into, if it's that stupid, right? If it's like starting two forest fires if you already have one, why is giving insulin to patients the standard of care? It was originally believed that insulin was required to allow glucose into cells. And this is back in the 1950s. Doctors thought glucose piled up in the blood in type 2 diabetics because they didn't produce enough insulin. So when they gave patients insulin and their sugar went down, they thought this proved them right. And this makes sense on a surface level. However, that's not true, and we've known this for years. Here's a quote, and again, I'm going to link these studies on the website, so check it out, tntwellnessandnutrition.com. You can find all these studies always. So, quote, current dogma would have us believe that administration of insulin to somebody with severely deranged diabetes suddenly and miraculously allows the cells in the body to breathe again and be restored to their former healthy state. This is, as we have seen, untrue. So it is amazing how long this dogma has persisted. These actions of insulin in vitro, which pretty much just means in a test tube, were discovered in the late 1950s, when it was also shown that insulin stimulated glucose uptake by rat muscle. It was an extrapolation of this last observation in rat muscle to explain the pathophysiology of diabetes that was erroneous. The consequence of this error was the concept of insulin being required for glucose entry into cells rather than just accelerating glucose uptake. The hyperglycemia of diabetes was interpreted as a damming back of glucose in the bloodstream as a consequence of a lack of insulin. This became established teaching. And although the concept was shown to be erroneous in the mid-1970s, the teaching has not changed. Consequently, therapy has been based on a flawed concept. Ooh, that was a long quote.
Well, I mean, we're talking about stuff in the 50s and 70s. And we should be able to figure out by now, like, what is the... If you get diabetes, what does the doctor tell you? It's only going to get worse, and you're going to have it for the rest of your life. I mean, honestly, like, how many diseases are really like that? Like, not very many.
Yeah, no one says you get the flu, now you're fucked for life.
So our treatment is going to make this last forever, and it's only going to get worse. That doesn't seem like a very effective treatment. And I don't understand why we haven't been able to figure that out by now.
Yeah, it's weird when you think of it that way. Yeah, it's actually really sad.
And but, then we talked about this last week a little bit, just how you're just saying, like, insulin isn't the only what or isn't required for glucose to enter the cell. Mm-hmm. Just exercise alone will increase GLUT4 transporters, just more cell receptors for glucose on your cell.
Yep.
So if you just do
no things, insulin required.
No insulin. Like if you just do things to increase that, like exercise, there you go. You don't need insulin for that.
Yep, exactly.
So there are other ways.
100%. But, I mean, sadly, this is still what's taught in all the textbooks. So textbooks still say that insulin's primary action is to allow glucose into the cell. But this is not true. Insulin does a ton of different things, but even when there is no insulin around, glucose gets into our cells perfectly fine. Quote, contrary to popular belief, supported by leading physiology and biochemistry textbooks, there is a sufficient population of glucose transporters in all cell membranes at all times to ensure enough glucose uptake to satisfy the cell's respiration, even in the absence of insulin. Insulin can and does increase the number of these transporters in some cells, but glucose uptake is never truly insulin dependent. And that's such a, that right there disproves the entire like ideology of giving patients insulin. They don't need it, you know?
Well, I mean, that's the old saying, like, if you teach an expert, or you teach a smart person how to do the wrong thing, they become an expert at doing the wrong thing.
Yes.
And that's just what we're doing there.
What you have your, that what's that basketball kind of analogy you make? Like, you can be the best underhand shot.
Yeah, if, like, Stephen Curry was, let's say, an even better three-point shooter, but he shot his shots all underhand, he wouldn't even make it in the NBA, because it would get blocked by, I could block that shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wouldn't be hard. So, yeah, like, you know, you have to learn stuff the right way. Like, mm-hmm. if you learn stuff the wrong way, it doesn't help.
Doesn't help. Yeah, exactly. So there's a doctor out there called Dr. Unger, and he has a great YouTube video about this. It's from a lecture he did in 2014 that really breaks down how doctors have had diabetes all wrong for years now. And I'll link the YouTube video on the website so you can check it out. Something he talks about is how it's incredibly hard to displace scientific dogma, even when the dogma is obviously incorrect. So Unger said, quote, "The flood of new information and facts in all branches of science far exceed the ability of scientists to assimilate and use the new information to displace dogma that are no longer valid." So, a crazy example of this is, I don't even know if you know this, it took 450 years after it was proven for people to believe that Earth wasn't the center of the universe. Because the dogma at the time was that the Earth was the center of the universe. And that's what was taught to all the quote-unquote experts of the time. So 450 years, we're talking over five generations.
You've used this example in a podcast before.
Oh, have I? It's a great fucking example.
No, it is a great example. I mean, it's probably like episode like 20. But you brought that up before.
That's how, I mean, but that's what we talk about, like, I mean, people bring this up to me a lot. I mean, maybe they do to you as well. But, like, if you're so right, why are we still messing up? I was like, I've only been right for maybe 50 years. Mm-hmm. Like, people haven't caught up yet. It takes so long to move these huge ships.
Especially when there's, like, a lot of, like, powerful industries that have vested interests.
In the bad narrative.
Yeah. So, like, it's pretty much, like, the way I feel about the ketogenic diet and stuff like that is, once it touches enough people, like, you know, hey, it worked great for me and you. We tell a couple of people. They tell a couple of people. And eventually, like, once enough people know and see how effective it is, then the industry is going to be forced to change.
Because it'll be undeniable.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think they're just going to change just because of that. I think it's really going to just have, like, oh, hey, a million people that have done this diet are all way healthier than the, like, 300 million that aren't on this diet. Maybe we should listen to them.
Yeah, okay. No, you're probably right.
We can't all be outliers.
Yeah, we all can't be crazy, right? So, okay, so we've established that insulin isn't needed to get glucose into our cells. So why does giving insulin lower blood sugar? Because that definitely does happen. What really happens is it slows down the body's ability to produce its own sugar. That's why someone with type 2 diabetes has constant high blood sugar. It's not because they are constantly eating sugar, even though some of them maybe do. What's going on here is that their livers are constantly making their own sugar, via gluconeogenesis because their pancreas no longer listens to insulin's normal suppression of endogenous glucose production. And if you want to, I just snuck in gluconeogenesis there. If you want to learn more about that, that's how our body produces sugar from other non-sugar sources. We have a whole podcast on it. You already know we do. I don't know what episode that was. It was a long time ago at this point. Like episode 30, maybe, something.
Yeah, I was going to say probably in the 30s.
Yeah, so a long time
ago. I'm always completely guessing at that. Yeah. It could be like 19. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's been a while, but check that out if you want to learn. It's actually very interesting, but you can check that out. But so it's an overproduction of endogenous glucose that causes blood sugar to be elevated in diabetics.
So before we continue, I want to note this is after you've already become diabetic. This isn't the case of like healthy individuals. This is the case once you're already damaged.
Super damaged.
This is already when your pancreas has received too much damage.
This is already when you measure your blood glucose in the morning and you're at like 255.
Yeah, it's the beta cells or alpha cells? Beta cells are already damaged.
Beta cells produce insulin. Those are going to be damaged. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So it's an overproduction of endogenous glucose that causes blood sugars to be elevated in diabetics. In a healthy person, we eat carbohydrates. That gets turned into glucose in our blood, and the hormone insulin gets elevated. The liver senses this elevation to insulin and stops making sugar. This is great, because we don't want to make sugar for our body if we just ate some. So our body uses the sugar from food for fuel, and after a few hours, when the body has used all the fuel from the meal, insulin lowers, and now the liver gets a signal again to start making carbohydrates to support blood sugar levels and keep sugar available for the cells that need it. In a type 2 diabetic, they eat sugar, and their body keeps making sugar at the same time. This is not a good thing. It's a recipe for disaster. So why do diabetics overproduce sugar? So now we can finally talk about the hormone glucagon. I mentioned it a little bit a few weeks ago, but I really want to take a deeper dive into it today. So the human pancreas does a ton of different things. But the two of the cells we want to focus on, like Tom mentioned earlier, are the alpha cells and the beta cells of the pancreas. The beta cells produce insulin, and the alpha cells produce glucagon. These cells sit right next to each other. You could think of them as being interconnected. Like, they're so close, they might as well be one.
One's the gas pedal, the other's a brake.
100%. Exactly. Glucagon is one of the hormones that makes sure our blood sugar doesn't drop to zero. Because if our blood sugar drops to zero, we're dead. Okay? There's just nothing, there's no way around that. You can think of glucagon as a fuel mobilizer. It'll make your fat cells release fatty acids into the blood supply. If you're dieting, glucagon is your friend. This is why you're getting skinnier, right? You're having more glucagon around, your body is burning this fuel. Glucagon actually doesn't work on the muscle fibers at all. Glucagon will not cause your muscles to release amino acids. And I've said this in the past and I was wrong. And glucagon does work on the liver to release amino acids, but not the muscles. And I wanted to kind of to clarify that because there's something called proteolysis, so the breakdown of protein to amino acids. I don't even know if you picked up on me saying that, but I have talked about glucagon before releasing amino acids, and our muscles don't have glucagon receptors. Little tidbit.
That seems like a major advantage, because why would we want to start breaking down our muscles for amino acids if there's other places we could get it from?
Exactly. Okay, so it makes perfect sense, but I have said that in the past and I was wrong, so I just want to make that clarification. So insulin does the opposite. Instead of mobilizing things and getting them into the bloodstream, insulin wants to get things out of the blood supply and store them. So getting amino acids into muscles and placing sugar into fat cells or muscle cells, that's what insulin wants to do. Insulin inhibits all the things glucagon stimulates, such as lipolysis, proteolysis, glycogenolysis, gluconeogenesis, and ketogenesis. Insulin doesn't lower blood glucose by clearing glucose out of the blood. It does it by signaling the liver to stop creating glucose. And in a diabetic, the liver no longer responds to this cue correctly. Quote, impaired insulin-mediated suppression of hepatic glucose production plays a major role in type 2 diabetes. And hepatic just means liver. So that's really insulin's primary job. It's not to shuttle sugar into cells. It's to put the brakes on glucagon. That's why I say diabetes is glucagon run amok. It's like the bouncer is gone in front of the club. Now we're letting all the bums in. It's not a good thing. No one's having fun now. You know what I'm saying? Like, insulin's gone. It just sucks. Glucagon's doing everything it wants to do. Here's a quote. When insulin is administered to people with diabetes who are fasting, blood glucose concentration falls. It is generally assumed that this is because insulin increases glucose uptake into tissues. However, this is not the case, and is just another metabolic legend arising from in vitro rat data. It has been shown that insulin at concentrations that are within the normal physiological range lowers blood glucose through inhibiting hepatic glucose production. Suppression of endogenous glucose production was markedly impaired in subjects with type 2 diabetes, and a decrease in insulin action results in prolonged high blood sugar, which is particularly severe when decreased glucose clearance is accompanied by excessive rates of endogenous glucose production. So again, I got some long ass quotes this week. You know, for this podcast made me good at one thing. It made me good at reading out loud. You know, people fear that shit in high school. You know what I mean? I'm fine with that now. So we talked about this last week. So all about really the mechanisms of diabetes, but a quick, you know, summary, all your cells are packed full of fat. They don't want more fat. They don't want more glucose. So you have a decreased glucose clearance. Now on top of that, your liver keeps making way too much glucose. This is all bad. You know, this is what leads to the blood sugars of 400, 500, 600, 700. This is what it is. So why is the liver still producing glucose when it's not supposed to? And that's because the alpha cells in your pancreas no longer listen to the insulin cue to stop glucagon production. And this is something that type 1 and type 2 diabetes share in common, is that they're both high in glucagon. So remember, the signal from glucagon produced by the alpha cells in the pancreas is to mobilize fuel, aka raise blood sugar. The first cells to feel insulin's effects are the alpha cells in the pancreas. The first thing insulin does is tell the pancreas to stop producing glucagon. Once this pathway gets inhibited by too much fat stored in the pancreas, called lipotoxicity, you get constantly elevated glucagon and constantly elevated glucose, also known as diabetes. Quote, it's that big buildup of fat in the pancreas, not total body weight or even total body fat, that correlates with the rising blood glucose. So for more info on lipotoxicity and also TOFI, like thin on the outside, fat on the inside, and being obese and healthy, like this is all touched on more deeply on a last week's podcast of reversing diabetes with the ketogenic diet. So check that out.
You keep saying last week's, but it's 2 weeks ago because we had that Kobe
episode. Oh, yeah, the Kobe episode. That's right. Yeah. So 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. So basically, like, what is happening is your pancreas is the first place that's going to be affected by too much insulin, because that's where insulin is produced. So once that happens, once your insulin or once your pancreas is damaged, those alpha cells that produce glucagon, once those are damaged, then everything starts falling apart. Like, that's the very, very first thing that happens, because that's the part that regulates blood glucose. So once you give your body too much blood glucose, or I mean, not too much blood glucose, too much dietary glucose, it damages your pancreas. So the cause is too much dietary glucose. That's the first thing that happens. And then that damages your pancreas because you've been giving it the wrong signals. You're giving it an unnatural signal that we would have never experienced in our entire evolutionary, like, existence.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to, like, make that clear.
Yeah, please make that clear. Yeah, we talked about lipotoxicity. It's not the fat that's actually the problem. It's carbohydrates in combination with the fats. And, well, again, we talked on that way more. That whole conversation obviously takes about an hour. We talked about it 2 weeks ago. So check that out, and we'll explain why. It's not fat's not the problem. Carbohydrates are the problem. So listen to that. So under normal conditions, there's a gradient of insulin concentrations from high to low within our body. So within the pancreas, insulin's around 2,000 units, to significantly lower at the liver, about 50 units, down to much lower in the systemic circulation, such as fat cells and muscle cells, about 5 units. So a normal dose of insulin will never effectively suppress alpha cell glucagon secretion and will only do a modestly effective job at suppressing hepatic glucose output. So glucose will be continuously secreted into the systemic circulation. The usual dose given can only put sugar into cells sensitive to insulin throughout the body, such as muscle cells and fat cells, so that's it. Like, you're never going to give somebody, like a diabetic, I mean, I guess people out there wouldn't know the usual doses of insulin given to diabetics, but you're never giving a diabetic 2,000 units. That would drop their sugars down to nothing. Okay, that would make every insulin-sensitive cell on their body suck up glucose. That would make their liver stop producing glucose. Their sugars would drop to zero and they'd be dead.
Yeah.
But that's the only amount of insulin required to actually fix the fucking problem and go to the pancreas. That's why giving insulin is stupid. You know what I'm saying? It'll never work.
Yeah, the dose required would be a fatal dose.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's it, man. That's why insulin is just so stupid. Giving them it just makes no sense. And I want to finish real quick touching on the insulin to glucagon ratio. We have talked about that in the past, especially when it comes to protein. So, I mean, we talk about this all the time. The hormones in our body act kind of like a dimmer switch. There's always glucagon around. There's always insulin around. We just want them in their proper proportions at the proper times. A high insulin to glucagon ratio means the body is in storage mode. A low insulin to glucagon ratio means the body is in burning mode. And this is a good time we can talk about protein. So some people in the keto world talk about protein raising insulin and how that can be a problem similar to ingesting carbohydrates, since carbs obviously raise insulin as well. And the raise in insulin causes diabetes, X, Y, and Z. So people, even like vegans, like you mentioned earlier, will kind of blame protein for diabetes. But that doesn't tell the entire story. Protein does raise insulin, but it also raises glucagon as well. And the context in which protein is ingested really matters. So for someone on the standard American diet, you know, whatever, you're real chubby, you eat McDonald's every day, your insulin to glucagon ratio is usually about 4, which is really high. On a low carb diet, your insulin to glucagon ratio is 1.3, which is low. That means you're in a kind of a burning state. Your body's producing its own sugar. And just for comparison, during an extended fast, your insulin to glucagon ratio is 0.8. Because just think, you have to produce all the sugar you need. When someone is on a low carb diet and they eat protein, their insulin to glucagon ratio stays at 1.3. So the insulin to glucagon ratio doesn't change. So protein is not the issue. We just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah, definitely. Because like we're talking about how bad glucagon is, and protein does activate glucagon, but it's not the problem.
Right. It's context matters.
Yeah.
It's not the problem. Yeah.
The real problem is that the increased carbohydrate and glucose intake that
you've years.
Yeah. You've done for 20 plus years has negatively impacted your pancreas, and now your body doesn't know what to do anymore.
Yes. Good point. So just talking about this podcast and the podcast a couple weeks ago, it may seem like insulin is some evil-ass hormone, like solely put on earth to make you fat, but that's not true. With anything in our body, it's about balance. There's a yin and a yang to everything, and it's no different with insulin and glucagon. The ratio between insulin and glucagon gets all out of whack in a diabetic. So if insulin is going to suppress the release of glucagon, which is one of its major roles, then the cells producing glucagon have to be insulin sensitive, right? They have to be able to feel that insulin release. And this is not the case in type 2 diabetes. This is reflected in their insulin to glucagon ratio in response to meals. So in a healthy person, this is what happens when a healthy person eats. The very first rise in insulin is associated with a profound reduction in glucagon, which is ideal. Insulin keeps on suppressing glucagon, and this insulin to glucagon ratio that results is over 7, which is very high. And this insulin to glucagon ratio tells the liver that it better get busy and suck up all the incoming glucose and store it as glycogen. This is the normal relationship of insulin and glucagon to one another and to their actions on the liver. Makes perfect sense. If you eat carbs, you don't want your liver to make carbs.
Yeah, exactly. Why would you want to increase your blood glucose even higher? Because everything needs to be in balance, like you've said over and over.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just going to result in hyperglycemia, which is dangerous. We don't want that.
Nope. So you do the same experiment in a pancreas isolated from type 2 diabetic animals, and the first thing you note is that the dramatic spike in insulin is gone, but baseline insulin levels are higher than normal. And we talked about why that is last week. You know, it takes more insulin baseline to keep fat in fat cells, even though you're already fat as shit. And this is because the insulin spike is gone, it's not surprising that there is no suppression of glucagon. And then despite the high levels of insulin, glucagon levels are always high because they are insulin resistant. The net result to give an insulin to glucagon ratio of less than 1. What this tells the liver is don't store incoming glucose. Continue to manufacture glucose because we are starving, even though a big meal has been ingested. In other words, the wrong information is being transmitted to the liver, and this is why glucose tolerance is so abnormal and hyperglycemia persists. The liver continues to produce glucose even though it doesn't need any glucose. And that's really the gist of diabetes. You're making glucose and you don't need it.
Yeah, like the way I kind of think of this is, you're at a concert and you've just been listening to loud music, and you're basically at a concert for 20 plus years of your life sitting right next to the speaker. You're going to go deaf eventually. All that damage is going to cause you to go deaf. And then after you go deaf, you are no longer an effective communicator. You're not able to communicate the right things. So now your pancreas is no longer to talk to your liver. And that's basically what's going on here.
Yeah, I love that. Well, it's really the not even like in your pancreas. Your pancreas doesn't talk to itself good.
Yeah.
Like the alpha and beta cells in the pancreas don't. Like that's a great, what is that, a metaphor? Like
analogy,
or the fuck that is.
One of
those things. I'm not an English major, okay? I'm a science major. But that's great. Because it's exactly what it is. It's been yelled at for 20 years. And it's like, bro, shut up. And it can't hear you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it never learned sign language. It never learned another like effective way to communicate. Uh-huh. So it's just confused.
Yeah.
Doesn't know what to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you want to get rid of that, obviously, listen to the podcast a few weeks ago. We recommend doing a ketogenic diet to reverse diabetes because it's 100% possible. But I think this podcast in combination with the one 2 weeks ago is a great, I don't know, backbone, a great framework to get your diabetes under control, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's...
Because, I mean, hold on. How many people, I guess, do you know a lot of diabetics?
Yeah, yes.
I mean, okay.
Unfortunately.
So yeah. I know a few diabetics myself. How many diabetics, like, it blows my mind how many of them don't even understand what's going on in their body.
No.
Like, they don't get why their blood sugar is 200 all the time.
What blows me away is when I talk to them about it, I'm like, okay, so what did the doctor tell you? And they tell you, like, how to eat. And I'm like, well, what were you eating before? And they explain to me it's almost the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, so why would the diet that gave you this disease be the solution to this disease? And they just kind of look at me kind of confused.
Like glazed eyes, like what?
Yeah, and then like I try to explain this to them, and some people listen. I've had a few of them try it. Most of them do well on it, and then for whatever reason, they kind of
fall off
and don't continue.
I know. And you know why? That's because high blood sugar is a silent killer.
Yeah.
99% of the time, you're not going to feel it when your blood sugar is 200. But you know what does feel it? Your kidneys. You know what does feel it? Your eyes. Your every like blood vessel in your body feels it.
Yeah.
You're paying a price.
Yeah. I mean, I've tried, but there's only so much you can do.
I know. I really wish, well, I mean, this is going to sound kind of twisted, but high blood sugar was painful. Because if it was, everyone would understand how bad these carbohydrates are.
Oh, for sure.
Like, if your blood sugar got to 180 and all of a sudden you were in crippling pain, nobody would be eating cereal every morning.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. And what's upsetting is even the American Diabetes Association, they've come out with, like, new recommendations where you can do a low-carb diet. Are they advertising that? Not at all. Are they telling doctors that? Probably not. Like, they are making changes to their website and their recommendations. They're just not advertising them.
Yeah. Actually, I saw the... I don't know, I guess it's a president, the lady, do you know who that is? She did a low-carb diet and really helped their diabetes.
Oh, okay.
This is a president of the ADA. And no one's talking about it, though.
Yeah, I've only heard one person talk about how, like, they made that recommendation.
Yeah,
and
that's
like,
true.
Yeah, like, they're for whatever reason, it's not advertised. I mean, I can see why they wouldn't advertise it.
Mm.
Oh, hey, the dietary recommendation that we've been giving you for the last 50-plus years...
It was
probably wrong. Like, here's a better solution.
And it's the opposite.
Yeah, you can try this one and it might be more effective or
yeah.
It might be just as effective.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's crazy, man. So, I don't know. I mean, did you want to add anything else to it?
I mean, basically, it's just like, hammering home, the glucagon is not the problem at first.
Mm.
It's the problem once all the damage has been done.
Yeah.
And that all that damage has been done by too much insulin.
Yes.
So, it's not... I mean, they are both the issue. First, it's too much insulin is the major issue. And then after that, that causes there to be too much glucagon.
Yeah.
So I don't want to, like, make people fear, like, protein because protein activates glucagon. Like, that's not what's going on here.
No, in a healthy person, like me and you, anybody, any athlete out there, anyone semi-lean, glucagon is your friend. Like I said, when you're dieting, glucagon is going to be elevated. That's why you're losing weight.
Yeah.
Glucagon is great. It's a mobilizer. All the fat around your hips and your stomach, you need glucagon to get that off of you.
Yeah, it's just like everything else, and it needs to be in balance, and yeah. Like, I mean, I feel like we made both of them sound horrible.
Yeah,
and they both can be horrible if they're in inappropriate ranges.
Yes, yeah. No, that's a good point. I think that's a good place to end it. Did you have a tip of the week?
I mean, this is kind of going to go back to what I said at the beginning of the podcast, is just like the whole gratitude thing. So I'm having a couple of my friends have been asking me like about training for a marathon, and like one of the first things you need to do is establish as many positive connections as you possibly can with running. Because, hey, this shit's going to get hard. There's going to be, like, if you're doing a marathon, like, I'm willing to bet it's probably going to take you 4 hours or more to run your first marathon. Like, if you're a sub 3 hour marathon, you're pretty damn good. If you're a 2 hour marathoner, you're the fastest person in the world. Like, you know, so most average people are going to be 4+ hours. I mean, in 4 hours of exercise.
Long.
That's long. You're going to experience so many different times of pain. So the more positive connections you can take, like, that'll definitely help you in your marathon itself. Because then you would just be like, man, this sucks. My legs hurt. But you know what? Like, hey, I can't believe I'm going to do this. This is like the most difficult thing I'm going to do. If I can do this, I'm going to inspire a bunch of others. Maybe it could even be more superficial. I love the way my body looks after I've been doing all this running. Oh, hey, look, I'm surrounded by good looking people. Like, there's a lot of different positive connections you can make. But I mean, this isn't limited to running either. Any sort of training is going to get difficult at times. But just establish as many positive connections as you possibly can, because that way it'll get you through it. I mean, I guess you can do the David Goggins approach and just, like, hate yourself into doing it, but that just seems miserable, like, and I don't know why you
would want to. And not too many people can keep that pace.
Yeah, like, I'm not trying to just be angry and hating everything, like, every day of my life. Like, no, I want to have as much positive connections and just loving it.
Yeah.
Like, I've experienced this so many times. Hey, running up and down a mountain is not easy, mm-hmm. and it's pretty painful. There's a bunch of times where I'll kind of, like, slightly roll my ankle and it'll kind of hurt. Like, my legs will cramp up, stuff like that. But as soon as I start getting negative thoughts, I instantly force myself to just reframe and then think of all the positives. Like, and that just, it helps me get through it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great tip. I mean, it's obviously easier said than done.
You know, definitely.
When your quads are burning, your lungs are burning, your liver hurts, it's hard to be like, oh, I love this, but you have to do it. You know, reframing things in a positive light helps a lot of people. It obviously helps you.
I mean, definitely. And that's why I, like, make a list of, like, 30 of them. That way you have
something to pull from, right?
So many. That way it's not just one thing. I mean, because if you just think about, oh, yeah, you know, I look great. I mean, hey, that can only do so much.
Yeah.
But if you got, hey, I'm inspiring my kids to run too. I'm so proud of myself for doing something that I thought was impossible. You know, you got all these, like, a big list of things to do. Like, oh, yeah, it's so much easier.
Yeah. No, that's a great tip. Well, all right. Well, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please share this episode with a friend, especially, you know, everybody knows somebody that has diabetes, and this can definitely have a major impact on their life. Also, feel free to rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.